Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Imran, the Don Khan.
You ever feel like you wish you had invested in GameStop? And the answer is no, because nobody ever feels like that until, like, right now.
Dude, it's insane.
It won't last, but, like, if you...
It won't last. I can't believe how high it's gotten.
But you can sell now and make a ton of money.
It's ridiculous. I'm pulling in a question. That's right. The show just started. We're 5 seconds in. I'm already pulling a question from patreon.com/ kind of funny game, which I was going to say for the post show, but Imran, since he brought it up, I'll bring it here in the main show. This question is from Nick from NY, who says it's still snowing, and also says, hello, KFGD crew. Months ago, Greg once commented it may be a good time to invest in GameStop when the company was trading around $5. At the time of writing this, GameStop stock is now trading at $150 per share. If you invested $100 when Greg told you, your investment would now be worth $3,000. We all know Greg is a top-tier gaming host, and also calm down, Nick. All right, complimenting Greg Miller too much. We all know Greg as a top-tier gaming host, but I'm curious if behind those beautiful brown eyes, the perfectly trimmed beard, and slick back hair, now I think it's Greg who's writing this, there isn't the financial group...
Or Jen,
there isn't the financial guru we all not want but deserve. Someone that wants to see everyone pay off their student loans, their $4,000 computer bills, and their upcoming trip to Super Mario World Japan. Over the months, Greg has been getting comfortable with DiGiorno Pizza, Oreos, and Spirit Halloween. I feel like you're taking it too far. A lot of cases here, Nick, but I'll continue. Should we be reading the tea leaves? What is Greg Miller trying to tell us about our next big potential payday? Love you guys. Thanks for all you do. Imran, what's been your whole take on this GameStop business? I'm going to disregard all the Greg Miller love because that's not the point of why I brought this question up. And in fact, I wish you didn't include that because nobody needs to give Greg Miller more love on this show. He already knows. Like everybody,
his head is already too big.
Yeah. His head is big enough. Imran, what's been your take on this GameStop business?
I feel like, one, it is funny to me that the entirety of our stock market is basically based on imaginary stuff and is incredibly fake, but also has real world repercussions that are going to result in a lot of lost jobs for a lot of people. But also, I wish I had invested money into GameStop. And like, I'm eyeing the AMC stock like, maybe.
There's still time.
There's still time.
I mean, earlier this week, go for it.
Like, this shit is like the whole reason why the stock's inflated is like stock craziness. Like, it's
memes.
It really is. Like, it is all tied to a particular Reddit group that is banded together to fuck over people that are shorting the stock, which, like, it's insane. And I'm very curious to see, like, just because it happened to this doesn't mean at all it's going to happen to another company that likely looks like it's going to fail and go under. That's why it's fucking risky as shit. But if you want to invest fucking like $150 in something that I like to just see what happens, you might lose that $150. Just remember that.
The thing is, we talked about this earlier this week, right? Like 2 days ago. And I was like, all right, be careful. Like, if you're going to invest in GameStop right now, be careful because anything can happen, right? And I was not expecting the stock to continue to go up. I was expecting it to drop out of nowhere. And that's still very likely to happen. This stock will drop out of nowhere. And so if you invest money, you are making a big risk. But if you have $150 that is just laying around and you're like, fuck it, man, maybe see what happens. I don't know.
It's Vegas rules. Don't bet money that you don't want to lose or don't care about losing.
Yeah.
And walk away when you feel you've got enough money. Like, I know that's hard. I know that's difficult because enough money is a difficult thing. Because like, oh, this is a $1,400 PC and a $3,000 PC. But like, still, if you don't feel comfortable like thinking you're for sure gonna get that $3,000 PC, walk the hell away.
Yeah, this is gambling in its purest form. Like, this is if you invest in GameStop, this is gambling. Like, you are this is not a sure thing at all.
Well, no,
because people are memeing.
I feel like at this point, probably too late. Like, it's not going to go much higher.
Probably. Like, but you don't know that for sure, though. You don't know that for sure.
Like, that's not how it works, though. Now, people are like, in the chat's been like, AMC, and it's like, AMC's today is like up 200%. Yeah, it's doubled in price.
Wait, people are doing this with AMC also?
Yeah.
Like, theaters?
I should have bought AMC yesterday when it was at $5. If you bought it at $5, you're now like, it's at 15, 16.
Yeah,
now,
you've tripled it. You've tripled it.
Yeah.
But again, this is scary shit. Like, I wonder what the long-term repercussions for this, so, like, being out in the open and done publicly. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating shit, guys. Fascinating shit.
This is the most exciting I've been about stocks probably in my entire life. I've never given a fuck about stocks. I've had conversations with my older sisters. In my heart, there's still like this thing that is like, it's gambling though, right? Like, this is all a I had this conversation with my older sister, like, because my older sister is into stocks, and she tries to get me into stocks because she's very money savvy. She's the one in the family who's making all that moolah. And she tries to convince me about stocks. And I'm like, I know you're probably right because you're smarter than me when it comes to this money stuff. But is it not all just gambling at the end of the day? Like, should I not just go to Vegas? I know it's informed gambling based on how you think things might perform, right? But I don't trust myself when it comes to anything about anything outside of video games to make a gamble in that way.
You're misunderstanding. You're looking at this shit in GameSpot and be like, oh my God, it went up X amount. Like, that's not what stock trading is. What it is like, fucking, all right, I know Google's going to keep being a thing for the next 30 years, so let's put X amount of money into it and leave it there for 30 years. That's what stocks really is.
But like, there's always that chance though that Google falls off a cliff out of nowhere. Something happens, a meteor hits Google headquarters.
Yeah, but like the reality is there isn't always that chance. You know what I mean? Like, Google is strong as fuck. Like, it right now, it's got like a lawsuit to try to break it up, saying it's a monopoly. But like, it's not like, it's probably gonna fail, and if it doesn't, it'll probably still be fine.
Big investments like that are gambling in the way that, like, oh, my house caught on fire and I lost a lot of, like, personal equity that way. Like, yeah, that could happen for sure. But, you know, you take the risk and you still own a house. I mean, you don't. Mm. No one in San Francisco does. But Kevin does.
Nobody in San Francisco except for Kevin owns a house. That is true. That is very true. Anyway, if you're keeping an eye on this GameStop business, good luck if you are putting money into it. I don't have any recommendations because I am not a stocks guy. All I know is that you're taking a risk.
Do not
and
listen to
at
us.
At this point, if you got 100 bucks, if you got 100 bucks laying around that you don't care about, if you're fine ripping up a $100 bill or seeing if the $100 bill turns into $200. I'm not encouraging gambling. I'm just saying maybe like,
it sounds like you're encouraging gambling. It sounds like that's what's going on.
Tiny bit.
I'm just saying, live your life on the edge. That's all I'm saying. Today's stories include Xbox Game Pass passing 18 million subs, a new Skate 4 studio, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, our review of The Medium is now up as a new episode of Kinda Funny XCast. You can catch Snowbike Mike, Paris, Tim, and Greg over there breaking down their thoughts on the game. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later. Do we have a review roundup? The answer is yes. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today. Could that number go up to 7? Do we want to take a bet on it? What if breaking news happens during the show? If you put in, if you put in 50 bucks right now,
he has a gambling.
You put in 50 bucks right now, that 50 bucks could go up.
Isn't the thing like Twitch?
Put a poll in the chat.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. Do we want to put a prediction is what they're called on how many mistakes you guys are going to do? More than five real good you're wrongs, or less than five real good you're wrongs?
See, I feel like I feel like that's unfair because I get to choose the you're wrongs.
Bless, if you're not modded, modded, you could do insider trading. I can unmod you. Say the word, I'll ban you right now.
Didn't Gary Whitta do that? Like, he bet him on himself.
Oh, yeah. He totally bet on himself. They knew exactly what he was going to do, and he met out like a fat cat. You know what I mean?
See?
Meow.
All right. I want two predictions in chat right now. The first one, will we get breaking news during the show? I feel like that's a risky one because that only happens once in a blue moon. Second one, under or over 5 year wrongs between me and Emron this episode.
I don't think you can do two like that. You can do one and then you have to wait till it ends.
Okay. Well, let's start off with the breaking news and then later on. Well, actually, no. Let's start off with the year wrongs and then get into breaking
news. But you could do the breaking news. Figure it out. You can do the breaking news until like the end of the show when they start your wrong. Then you can do how many they got. But they got to be quick. Chat, be quick. Chat, be quick.
Be quick, chat. Be quick,
chat. Come on, Mons.
Story number one, Xbox Game Pass subscribers hit 18 million. This is Tom Warren at The Verge. Microsoft is continuing to attract people to its Xbox Game Pass service. The Netflix for video game service now has 18 million subscribers, up from 15 million previously reported in September. Xbox Game Pass is a subscription service that offers access to a growing selection of more than 100 Xbox games for $9.99 per month. Microsoft has been pushing Xbox Game Pass for more than a year now, and it's clear the company is heavily invested in its future. Bungie's Destiny 2 title appeared on Xbox Game Pass late last year, and Control is also available on the service for both Xbox and PC. On an earnings call today, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella also revealed that Xbox Live has more than 100 million monthly active users. Nadella also said the launch of the Xbox Series X and S was the most successful in Microsoft's history, with the most devices ever sold in a launch month. Emron, are you impressed by these numbers?
I imagine they're probably lower than they want them to be, judging by that weird backlash decision they made this week. But I think that number just needs to keep growing. More than that, it needs to keep making money. Because I think there's a threshold point where right now, I don't think Game Pass is probably all that profitable. It's probably making a little bit of money, but not enough. There's a point where they have to hit a critical volume where then it's like, okay, now we can actually shop this thing around to third-party developers more openly and just say like, hey, you're losing money by not putting it on Game Pass day one. Because that's always going to be the big problem of like, are they going to have enough people that are willing to, you know, trade day one sales for Game Pass numbers? 18 million is probably getting up there. I think they're probably going to want to hit by end of this year, if they don't hit 25 to 30, probably closer to 30, then I think growth has slowed down way too much. But yeah, it is an impressive number that I think for them needs to be a bit more impressive.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, right, them not launching the Xbox Series X and S with Halo Infinite probably plays a role in these numbers probably not being as high as they may want. And maybe that even might lead to them wanting to increase Xbox Gold in order to have that conversion rate in order to pump those Game Pass numbers up. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. Because I look at this number, 15 million in September, 18 million subscribers now. That probably is bumped by the launch of the new consoles. I wonder how much that would have been bumped if we got Halo Infinite, and I wonder how much that continues to be bumped once we get more of those big exclusive titles, being Halo Infinite, Hellblade, Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, and then Psychonauts 2 and all the other games that we can expect from Xbox.
Yeah, Halo is going to be the big pusher. Now we know, presumably, Halo Infinite's multiplayer will be free to play and will not require gold. Are people going to want to subscribe to Game Pass just for the campaign? Or is it going to be a thing of we're going to have Halo Infinite DLC in terms of multiplayer, stuff like that, new maps, all that kind of jazz, but that's only free for Game Pass users. Is that direction they're going to take for that? I'm curious, because they have a lot of options here. They have a lot of options of how they increase these numbers. And I think some of those are going to be dialing down on what people have to pay for. So yeah, it'll be a combination of that, big first party games and some big third party coups. If I were Microsoft, and let's say hypothetically Starfield is coming out this year, I would, and there's already work done on a PS5, PS4 version, all that jazz. I would let those versions come out, but on Xbox they are free on Game Pass, because that does get people to come over to I'm not going to spend $70 on this thing when I could be spending $10 a month or whatever, and just let them keep subscribing, or let it not last but resub with people not realizing it or whatever. But having those, getting people into the ecosystem, is going to be the most important thing, and I believe that they have a decent three-pronged approach towards that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the episode that's all about gambles. I feel like that is a gamble. That is something that I expect that from Xbox, because that's been their whole promise, is that you're going to get first party Xbox games as part of Xbox Game Pass. Starfield, being one of the biggest games that they have coming out in the future, right? Like, you imagine there's already work put into the PlayStation versions. That's probably a game that you do want to have be a multi-platform release in that way. Putting that game on Xbox Game Pass, for what Xbox Game Pass numbers are doing right now, you'd probably want that to increase by a lot. I think if I was Microsoft, I'd probably want to be doing Nintendo numbers in terms of attachment rate, because they mentioned here in the article that Xbox Live has more than 100 million monthly active users, which plays into conversations we've had on this show and other shows in the past of Xbox on their side. They're going to be paying more attention to active users way more than actual console numbers, right? Because we get them with having the quote, the most devices ever sold in a launch month. They're not saying numbers, right? Which probably plays into one, they don't want to have that direct comparison with PlayStation in terms of what those numbers actually are. And then two, if we can get focused on how many monthly active users we have on our platform, that is going to sell a story. That is going to let people know exactly how we're doing in the ways that we are measuring our success. That said, with over 100 million monthly active users, I think you want to bump that up to like 30 million on Game Pass. Right. Like you want that attachment rate to be high if you're going to make that gamble and put all your first party games going forward on Game Pass.
The only thing I'm correct there is that 100 million active users does not mean on their platform. It can mean like we can consider PC to probably also their platform, but it also means like, hey, I'm logged on to Xbox Live on my Switch on Minecraft, like that kind of thing.
Mm.
So Minecraft does probably do a lot of heavy lifting for that sort of thing.
For sure. Yeah. But even still, though, like you still want to get those Game Pass numbers up, because 18 million is a lot for a subscription service for Microsoft, one that's been around for, I'm not going to try and count them, how many years we've had Game Pass, quite a few years. 18 million is a good number. But yeah, for a future where you're going to have eventually like Deathloop and stuff, but then Starfield and Halo Infinite and Fable and Forza and all this stuff, those monthly users got to go way up for them, I imagine. Otherwise, they got to cut that plan somewhere.
Yeah. All they need is one major game, I think, that is like, it is a better deal on Game Pass than anywhere else. And like, that could be a first party game, which would just, you know, that'll be maybe the easiest way into it. Or like, it could be a huge third party game. But yeah, I think they're primed for the opportunity. It's just a matter of like, when does that opportunity come? And hopefully it is not too late. Like, hopefully it is a situation where it could just be like, oh shit, Game Pass is this is where the industry is straight up going at this point. Let's all get on this train. I'm hoping for the best, because I think Game Pass is a, but Microsoft has been undergoing this long-term transition since 2013 of what company they want to be. And I'm still like waiting for them to actually drop that other shoe and just be like, all right, yeah, this is it. This is our full force thrust towards this what we want to do now. It still kind of feels like they're like towing the line a bit too much.
Now, the rumor has been that Halo Infinite is going to have a multiplayer version. Or I don't know if this is a rumor or if this is just speculation that the multiplayer version is going to be free to play.
No, that's confirmed.
That's confirmed? Okay,
They said it on Twitter before Infinite got delayed. No, not before it got delayed. It was like there was a report about it, and then they denied it, and then they actually just straight up said in a tweet.
Okay. Okay, well, my question was going to be, does that still happen now that Xbox Live Gold is allowing free-to-play games to be online? But I guess that's not a thing you can necessarily take back at that point, if you've confirmed it.
Yeah, if they take it back, that'll be real stupid. But also, it is probably the way for it to go. Like, Halo Infinite needs to be, like, a game anyone can play.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it does make me feel like, are people going to want to subscribe to Game Pass for the single-player campaign alone? But I guess the logic is, if you're subscribed to Halo, or if you're playing Halo Infinite, you're probably subscribed to Game Pass, so it doesn't really matter whether or not you make that leap or not.
Mm-hmm. Imran, I want to kickflip over to story number two. EA announces a new studio for Skate 4. This is Michael McWherter at Polygon. Electronic Arts is making a new Skate game and has formed a new studio for the project, the company announced on Wednesday. That studio, named Full Circle, is headquartered in Vancouver, but EA describes the team as global with, quote, a geo-diverse team and culture, end quote. Leading full circle in development of the new skate is Daniel McCulloch, formerly a general manager of Xbox Live at Microsoft. McCulloch's credits also include producer roles on the Forza Motorsports series and Microsoft's first-party Kinect games. Quote, "The fans wished Skate back into existence, and we want them to feel involved in the process from development to game launch and beyond. We want them to feel like they are part of Full Circle," McCulloch said in a news release. Quote, "We're all about having fun and making great games that people want to play with their friends. And we're looking for more developers to help us build compelling worlds for players to explore," end quote. Electronic Arts named Darren Chun and Chris Cuz Perry as Skate's creative leadership, saying the duo have been integral to the creation of the franchise and development of all three original games. Cool stuff. Imran, how far off do you think the Skate game is? Because them announcing the new studio finally is awesome. They announced it with a bunch of job listings, which tells me that we probably still have a ways to go.
Yeah, no, I'm going to guess this game was an internal project for a little bit. And then it was like, well, we don't have the resources for this, or we don't have, like, it might be better to bring in an outside team or even create an outside team. That said, like, it does seem like now they're committed. Like, now there's no, Skate 4 is happening. They're not going to go back on this in any way. This is, like, if they're going to create an entire new studio for it, or to at least, like, launch with this game, then I'm excited that they are. It's hard to commit with E3. That's the thing, or not E3, EA. That I'm always worried that something is going to drop with them.
Dude, it could always be a Visceral Games situation, right? Where you get a few years into this game, EA is like, oh fuck, we didn't realize you're making a Skate game, and they cancel it. Because that's exactly what happened with the Visual Star Wars game, where they're like, oh fuck, you guys are making a single player linear Star Wars game? Nuh-uh. And everybody's like, wait, that's what we wanted though. And they're like, no. That could always happen with EA, which is a scary thing. But
a
Star Wars Skate 4 level, I'd be totally into it.
Yeah, like go up and down a Death Star. There we go, done.
That actually sounds pretty tight. That actually sounds like the curves in the Death Star are the half pipe.
Yes,
I'm into it. That'd be sick. I mean, Darth Vader was in a Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, or Darth Maul. Darth Maul was in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. And so it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
<That's cool.
laughs> Yeah, right. I think this game is probably a bit far out, right? Like I'm looking at
It's gonna be 3 years, like
2 to 3 years,
before
we get that game. And I'm fine with that, honestly, because one, we have Skater XL to hold us over, but then also like we do have games like Session that are coming through and Skate Story and other developers that are throwing their hat into the ring at making a skate-ish type game. And I think there's enough there to hold us over it that I'm totally fine waiting. Like, I'm down to play all these different games and see what all these different developers have in store and can put out there before we actually get there at a Skate 4.
It would be funny to me if people left Vicarious Visions and came to Full Circle to work on Skate. Because, like, if you're not going to get a chance to make another Tony Hawk game, might as well make a new Skate.
It's like, I love my Skate games. I need to get my Skate fix. I'm out of here. I'm going to a real publisher.
Yeah.
EA.
That's at some point Western publishing is just going to be like bouncing between Sony, EA, and Activision.
Yeah, and Microsoft.
Yeah. Though even though like how many? Well, yeah, I guess this is Vancouver too. So they would cover all of North America.
Let's talk about self-publishing, Imran. Story number three, Hitman 3 has already recouped its development costs. This is Christopher Dring at GameIndustry.biz. I had to put in all my brain power in to figure out how am I gonna transition into this next story. And I did it. Congrats to me. Hitman 3 is already profitable, IO Interactive has announced. The stealth game launched last week, immediately shot to the top of the UK charts, and it has recouped its development costs in under 7 days. Quote, "We've been really happy with the Hitman 3 journey," says IO Interactive CEO Håkan Abrek. Quote, "It has been a labor of love between our fans and everyone at the studio. As developer and publisher, we are immensely proud that we can say Hitman 3 is already profitable. We have recouped the total project costs in less than a week. That puts us in a really good place and allows us to confidently move forward with our ambitious plans for future projects," end quote. Hitman 3 is the first full game in the series that was self-published by the studio, and Abrek tells GameIndustry.biz that keeping marketing and PR close to the development team has been a huge benefit. Imran, have you been playing Hitman 3?
No, I just finished. So I told you before, I never finished 2. So I just, like, I waited for all that stuff to import into the 3 engine because saving and reloading is a big part of my Hitman experience. It was way too slow on PS4. So I went through, I just finished 2 yesterday. Mm. You know what people don't talk about, Blessing? How good 2's levels are. Everyone talks about, like, Miami, but, like, the Ark Society is so good. And Vermont is incredible. Like, holy shit. Like, both those levels... In a way, it almost makes me feel like I wonder if 3 is good. I've not heard a lot of people talk about 3 yet, but like I've also kind of been avoiding it. I kind of wonder like, are 3's levels going to be this good? Because like a lot of these are just straight up bangers.
Oh yeah, like the Vermont is that the neighborhood level?
Yes.
Yeah, that level is dope. I remember watching Giant Bomb play through Ark Society and being like, okay, this is pretty dope. And yeah, no, Hitman 2 had some great levels. Hitman 3 so far, I've only played the first 3, being Dubai, Dartmoor, and the one after Dartmoor. I can't remember the name of it. And so far, I've liked 2 out of those 3 levels. I like the first 2, with Dartmoor being the very obvious standout. That's the thing about the conversation around Hitman 3's levels is I feel like everybody's talking about Dartmoor, and people haven't really been talking about levels beyond that. Like I've seen a few people talk about Chongqing also, but Dartmoor it really is the standout compared to the rest of it. Like it feels like Hitman 3's Clockwork Mansion or Clockwork Tower, I forget what it's called, from Dishonored 2, right? Where that level's so good that people just focus on it and don't really dive deep or don't really have that conversation around all the other levels that are also pretty good to decent. Yeah. That said, like for how they've performed so far, Hitman 3 in sales, like I'm very impressed by them recouping their costs within a week. Not totally surprising because I wonder how much development costs are for a game where they are kind of taking the platform that they already have and layering on new assets and new levels and a few new mechanics and polishing it up and repackaging it and selling it. I imagine that isn't as costly as trying to make something from the ground up, which means that they're able to recoup those costs a bit easier. That said, this is still pretty impressive. Yeah. Congratulations to IO.
Let's take a second to visit like the alternate universe where Square Enix never sold off IO Interactive or sold them back the Hitman IP. I think they probably wouldn't be getting to this point where they're like, oh, here's a Hitman 3 that's like decently successful for us. I think they would probably have been like dragooned into working on Avengers. And I don't think it would have worked out well for them. Because like that was the reason they sold off IO in the first place, was they wanted to free up money to work on Avengers.
So which is wild. Like it's wild to think about given the performance of Avengers compared to the performance of Hitman. Not that Hitman is the biggest moneymaker, but Hitman at least is able to recoup its costs in a way where Avengers comes out and there are articles coming out about how, yeah, like that game was able to recoup its marketing costs.
Yes.
And that's an issue. Like that's a bad decision. Back to the conversation about gambling. You got to be willing to take the risk.
I think like this does help James Bond though, cuz like Hitman is a critical darling and it's like a cult classic, even though like it doesn't always perform super great in sales. Like recouping your development costs, great. You're probably going to make a tiny profit after this, but it's not never going to be like a, I'm going to pick a random name here, Borderlands style success. It won't hit like 12 million copies sold or whatever. But like James Bond theoretically could. And having the backing of, oh, this is one of those people who made that really good like stealth game that people were talking about for the last 5 years. Like that is going to help James Bond combine with that license.
Imran, do you remember there was a news story about a developer recently hiring up to work on a new project? Was that IO Interactive? I feel like there was a news story about how IO Interactive is kind of funny.com/ you're wrong. IO Interactive, I believe, is hiring up from 200 employees to 400. It's either IO or a similar studio working on a similar upcoming project.
Do not recall.
Check that for me, because if that's the case, I am on the edge of my seat to see how James Bond plays out, because I have a lot of faith in James Bond. I'm very much looking forward to IO Interactive's James Bond, because I think they're the perfect studio to work on it.
Yes, by the way, it was IO. Yes.
Cool. Yeah, IO's hiring up from 200 to 400 to work on this next game. Ever since Cyberpunk now, I am very much like paying attention to studios hiring up or doubling in size in order to work on a new project. Because Cyberpunk for me has been a lesson of, dude, you gotta grow smart and you can't just grow and expect to make things work based off your past successes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I'm not saying this to say that I was going to fall into the same trap as Cyberpunk and CD Projekt Red, because obviously like that was very much a them thing of, hey, y'all fucked up on multiple levels. But I say that to say growing is always the difficult thing, right? Yeah. And I wonder what an IO with 400 employees looks like compared to an IO with 200 employees. Are they able to grow well? Are they able to adjust in the ways that they need to in order to make that thing work? I got my eyes peeled.
Yeah, extra resources are great, but you always have to remember that game development is labor and it is art at the same time. And like, you can't just throw more numbers at it like Pikmin. You have to like have a decent management to actually manage all these people and keep a project on track. And a lot of great game design projects fall apart because mm-hmm. just they can't keep everything a cohesive whole.
Yeah. So we shall see. Once again, congratulations to IO Interactive and Hitman. I cannot wait to get back to Hitman. That's the thing is, like, in alternate universe, I would have finished Hitman by now and probably played the levels multiple times. But it's one of those things where the day it came out, me and you both had the issue of not being able to transfer progress from previous games. And so I was like, okay, cool, I'll wait on this. And then Sekiro sucked me back in. And now I'm on the final boss of Sekiro. And I've been on the final boss of Sekiro for days. And it's hard for me to play anything else that's not Sekiro until I beat this damn final boss, but he's kicking my ass. And
well, so, after you stream RE7, you should just stream some Hitman.
Oh, man. It feels like you're assuming I'm going to stream RE7 when I've made no plans to.
The people have demanded it. Greg Miller, I think.
Yeah, dude, I've been hearing about it. I've been hearing about it for literally days.
I will not stream RE7.
Look at the chat. Look at the chat. They are blowing up with this.
Chat really thinks I'm going to stream Resident Evil. Oh, you guys got another thing coming to you if you think I'm going to stream Resident Evil. Even though I say that, I literally streamed Sea of Thieves yesterday on my personal Twitch channel.
It sounds like you might actually get some of your highest numbers. You know what I mean?
That's all I'm saying. There is a popular hashtag of Bless versus Baker to see you stream Resident Evil.
Why?
Popular Resident Evil influencer Brittany Bromacar also retweeted this this hashtag.
Why do people want to see me play Resident Evil? I have probably the worst Resident Evil takes on this channel. You don't want to see me stream Resident Evil.
Everyone wants to see it, Blessing. It's inevitability. I think at this point you should just give up and accept.
It seems very clear that they really want you to do this.
Yeah, chat is very much like active right now. They very much want me to play it. I do not want to.
I think we have it on slow-mo too. Ari. Just so you know.
Dear Lord. Speaking of horror games, story number 4, The Medium has reviews out right now. I'm going to do this review roundup right here. Metacritic, it's sitting at a 73. Open Critic, it's sitting at a 72. I'm going to start with Tristan Ogilvy, who reviewed it for IGN and gave it an 8. Tristan writes, The Medium uses a unique reality-shifting ability to bring a new dimension to some tried and tested genre puzzle solving mechanics. It presents an intriguing mystery to unravel and adds a tangible sense of urgency to your investigations by placing a truly memorable villain hot on your heels. It isn't able to play with perspective as effectively as some of Blooper Team's other work, but it's brilliantly paced and palpably tense. An absorbing and nerve-wracking journey from the shriek of its first jump scare to its very last gasp, The Medium delivers a psychological horror adventure that's all thriller and no filler. Serial Vasquez reviewed it for Polygon and gave it an unscored review and says, The Medium starts off personal and poignant, but ends in cliche. Eventually, The Medium abandons its surprisingly empathetic take on the afterlife altogether to become a thriller, which, while honing in on a single thread, ends up being shallow and disappointing. The twists aren't predictable, but aren't shocking either. And while the latter half of the game sets itself up as an intricate web of interconnected relationships and secrets, it teases out hidden identities and other twists for way longer than it took for me to figure them out, leaving me waiting for the story to catch up. By the time I had rolled credits and began processing what had just happened, I realized I didn't have many plot points or striking moments to chew on. Lastly, Jordan Ramey over at GameSpot gave it a 9 out of 10 and says, eventually, The Medium's narrative threads begin to weave together, even connecting to the original goal of discovering Marianne's origins. The promise that everything somehow connects in some unforeseen and fascinating way is a thrilling reason to see the game all the way through. And to that end, The Medium's conclusion sticks with you. It's one last horrifying reminder that trauma may not define a person, but It can have consequences we can't even begin to foresee if it's not adequately dealt with and simply left to fester over time. I can't say I enjoyed the ending to the medium, but I am deeply satisfied with how it sets up the inescapable nature of its horrifying conclusion. Of course, I mentioned earlier at the top of the episode that Kinda Funny's XCast review of The Medium is now up. It's Snowbike Mike, it's Greg, it's Tim, and it's Paris. I hit up Mike right before this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily to give me a short description of his blurb review of The Medium. Snowbike Mike, of course, the homie, Snowmichael Michael, hit me back and gave me this. The Medium is a creepy, unsettling, and good horror game that can be completed over a weekend. If you like the old school Resident Evil games where puzzle solving is at the forefront along with a decent story, then you'll like this. The biggest issue with the game is its third-person fixed camera angles and tank controls, which feel really antiquated and outdated and bring down the overall experience when it comes to solving those puzzles and stealth sections. Those issues lead to a lot of frustration and checkpoint restarts due to not being able to see what's happening. It looks good, but not jaw-droppingly great, and they promote a world where you jump between two worlds instantly, which it does well, but not near enough to make it feel like a truly special experience that does anything new or different. It's a good addition to Game Pass in the horror game genre, but I wouldn't recommend buying this at full price, unfortunately. It's a good horror game in a genre that's lacking on console, so it gets a good nod from me, but left me frustrated with the tank controls and camera angles. The story and setting was good enough and got me creeped out. Imran, have you touched The Medium, or do you have any interest in playing The Medium?
About 2 hours. I kind of side more with Tim on the XCast. So like, he just didn't like it. Like, he thinks it's fine. It is completely fine until, like, you reach those parts that just aren't. And, like, for me, I just kind of got bored after a while because it felt like a lost style teasing of, oh, there's more of this mystery to go. And I'm like, yeah, but we haven't solved the other mystery yet. Why are we introducing a new mystery here? And, like, I love the concept of it, but it doesn't feel like it pays off in an interesting way. And granted, I've played 2 hours, but after 2 hours, I was like, I'm bored of this. I'm probably not going to go back. And it's the definition of a Game Pass game. It's the definition of a game that's like, oh, it starts with a mystery. If the mystery intrigues you, then keep playing. Either way, you have the same amount of monetary investment. Like, Game Pass games feel easier to just go like, all right, this didn't hit. Cool, I'm done. And I think Medium very squarely falls into that mindset.
Mm-hmm. And Ron, speaking of that, Chris writes in patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and said, I enjoyed the XCast review of The Medium. The game doesn't sound great, though. Paris says, quote, I found the gameplay loop tolerable. Tim says, the prettiest PS2 game, and add in the tank controls for good measure. Is Game Pass, by removing a real value proposition, lowering the bar for good content to good enough content?
Yeah, they did that with Crackdown 3. Like, that was like the definition of that, of, I don't know that I want to pay $60 for this, but, you know, cool for Game Pass. Like, I think that is it's actually a pretty decent niche to, especially since AA games are basically dead, that you can just kind of create them for Game Pass, and that's where they live, and they exist as, like, what's the word, for Netflix filler, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not what anyone subscribes to this service for, but hey, it's here, and I'm bored, so why not?
Yeah, it's a difficult one for me because I don't know if it's a Game Pass thing or if it is a Microsoft still finding their footing with first party and what those games look like first party exclusives that they're either partnering with or publishing themselves, because they are still in the place where they've announced all these studios that are working on all these upcoming games, but those games are still in the works. And Bluer Team feels like one of those ones for Microsoft where it's like, all right, y'all have games that you guys are already working on, and we can partner up so we can have games that we can call Xbox exclusive that come out right now while we are working on all these other games. And by that, they kind of end up on Game Pass because they need something. Like, they need something to put on the platform. Otherwise, the platform is just sitting stagnant in terms of exciting, quote-unquote, new releases.
It needs to have, like, a very diverse portfolio, really, of, like, here's the big AAA, like, here's your Perfect Dark, here's your, you know, Gear 6, whatever, with like stuff that's a little bit lower of, what was the game I was literally just thinking of is now falling out of my head. But like stuff that, sure, Psychonauts 2 is a good example of like, well, I don't know how good that game is going to be, but you know, let's assume that it's a good game, but like let's say Metacritic 80.
Yeah.
Like if that game's like a Metacritic 80, that's like, okay, cool. This is enough to, I'm happy I'm not, or I would have paid for this, but I'm glad I do not have to. Like that level of game stuff on Game Pass is going to be great. Then there's like the next tier down of, I don't know what anyone expected from a Team Bloober game. Bloober game, like they're all like this. They're all like the medium. That's why I'm not like incensed about this game at all. It's like, okay, yeah, this is a lot like Blair Witch in terms of what I expected from it. And like, that's, I think the filler part of it. That's the, this is not in a way to demean the Great British Bake Off in any way, but Great British Bake Off is one of those games that you don't want like sit there and binge through. It's okay, cool. The new series is out, or new season is out. I might as well, you know,
yeah,
give it a watch. Like,
it's there, so I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I think that's where these kind of games occupy. So you do need that level of diverse portfolio as well. Like packing peanuts essentially into the rest of the Game Pass milieu.
Yeah, like for these reviews of the medium being such a range, from GameSpot giving it a 9 to Polygon just being like, yeah, no, it was kind of disappointing. I think the medium is probably hitting the way that it can, right? Like this isn't the only way in which these reviews are surprising to me, and is the fact that there is such a range, right? I was expecting this game to come out and kind of be that in that mid, you know, swimming in sevens range, which for the medium is probably fine, especially for a game that is coming out on Game Pass, for a game that is from Bloober Team, which is this studio that is able to churn out horror titles in their niche that seem to hit well enough for what they are.
Weird fast too, like,
yeah, weirdly fast.
Blair Witch was like what, like a year or two ago?
Was Blair Witch not last August, or was it was it 2019? It was probably 2019, wasn't it? So that would have been like a year and a half.
Nothing, but I'm gonna
time doesn't really mean nothing, because if you told me Blair Witch came out last August, I'd be like, yeah, oh yeah, oh, obviously it did. It might have been August 2019, because time is a flat circle. Yeah. But yeah, for like what for what that studio does and what they're doing, right? Like Metacritic sitting at a 73 and 72 seems like a hit more than a miss for a Bloober Team.
It is fine. It is like, you know, like I said, I don't know what else to play. I'm between games. Might as well play this. Also, by the way, Yakuza game's coming soon. Maybe play those as well.
There you go. All right, let's talk a little bit about games coming to the big screen. I got two news stories for you. All right, let's start with number 5. Kevin Hart is playing Roland in the upcoming Borderlands movie, and I couldn't be more excited about this. This is from Wesley Yenpool at Eurogamer. Jumanji star Kevin Hart, which, pause there, that's the best way you could have started off this article. Shout out to you, Wesley Yenpool.
That's the best way. That's the best thing he's known. Like, not like huge
Jumanji
comedian.
Star Kevin Hart. Like, this man didn't put out Laugh at My Pain, you know? I love it. I absolutely love it. Jumanji star Kevin Hart. Why can't I open up this thing? There you go. Jumanji star Kevin Hart has signed on to play Roland in the Borderlands movie. According to Hollywood Reporter, the actor has closed his deal to star in Lionsgate's adaptation of Gearbox's shooter series. Roland is Borderlands soldier class, which again, I'm going to pause there. Roland is a tough dude from Borderlands. Like,
yes,
he is not a Kevin Hart.
Nope,
which again, another reason why I'm very excited for whatever the fuck this movie is going to be. I'll continue. The character tends to focus on shotguns and combat rifles, and can deploy a turret. It's a different kind of role for Hart, who is focused on comedies. The Borderlands movie feels like it's gathering pace at this point. Eli Roth is set to direct, with Kate Blanchett signed on to play Lilith. Chernobyl creator Craig Mazin wrote the script, with Gearbox chief Randy Pitchford down as executive producer. It's going to be the greatest movie of all fucking time.
That is a lopsided sentence. Maybe this is good. Oh, no. Okay.
It sounds like such a Frankenstein's monster of a movie, and I'm all about it. Here's a quote from Eli Roth, who says, "I'm thrilled to be working with Kevin. Borderlands is a different kind of role for him, and we're excited to thrill audiences with a side of Kevin they've never seen before. He's going to be an amazing Roland," end quote.
Kevin Hart's short.
Like, yeah.
Let's just throw that out there.
Kevin all Hart right, is a really all short right. You're not much you of a tallie, short? All right? Come on.
No, could you imagine
I'm sure
a short-ass Roland?
Just make everyone else look short.
if there was like a Great Khali movie, they're like, Imran, do you want to play Great Khali? I'd be like, there's like 3 feet of difference for why I should not play Great Khali. Like, this sounds like to me like Jumanji.
It'll be great.
They'll Tom Cruise in with the apple crates.
Wait, the Great Khali, like the wrestler?
Yeah.
That's a hilarious poll.
No, because like once I went, we did some costume party when I was in college, and like we went as wrestlers, and I did Khali, and it was like,
that's awesome.
No.
That's awesome. That is the best fun fact about you that I didn't know. That is funny.
At the time, I had long hair and the beard, so it made some sense. But yeah.
The Great Khali's finishing move was literally a karate chop, which is still the wildest thing to me. Like, everybody went hype over the man chopping at somebody's shoulder. Wrestling is awesome. Yes. This movie
This man
sounds...
is so tremendously tall.
That was the whole thing. It's like, he was a giant.
Yes.
He was like this giant dude where like he would walk down and he wouldn't say words. Like everybody was just scared of him because
like,
he was just this
Kane,
giant dude.
Right? That's Kane stand. Yep, that's Kane.
That's a
Kane
lot of
is
people.
Not
that's
a short
Kane.
Man. Kane is
no,
not
the Great
a short
they
man.
Call him the Great Khali for a reason. He's yeah. huge.
Look how much
terrifying.
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell. There it is. The Undertaker, who is a tremendously tall man. Tremendously yes. tall.
Yep. I'm pretty sure he was probably the tallest dude wrestling tall at the time he was active.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, like, this movie sounds like a Frankenstein's monster of a film, and I cannot wait for it because I remember talking about the Eli Roth being pulled in to direct, and the conversation around it being like, okay, is this going to be like a gritty, fucking violent, almost like a horror film with Eli Roth attached to it, and Kevin Hart being pulled in to play a character totally upends that in a way where I have no idea what this fucking movie is going to be when it comes out.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be like Jumanji, or like a spiritual sequel to Jumanji, of like that kind of tone, but like in a desert and like no Rest for the Wicked playing.
Eli Roth is like not like you know what I mean? Like he's off. Like he's an actual sociopath. Like his movies are like this is going to have like people getting sawed in half for sure, right?
But in a
like,
funny way.
Kevin Hart being involved with that. Makes it sound goofy gritty.
Yeah, but like he did say, like, this is going to be like a different role for him. And like, what if this is Kevin Hart trying to get like a serious acting role? God.
Kevin Hart has to be more self-aware than that. Kevin Hart will never have a fucking... Kevin Hart will never be in A Pursuit of Happiness or any sort of like serious...
Don't
acting
pigeonhole
role.
People. Now I do think that like Borderlands is like Andy is right. Borderlands is not serious. But what if they take it super serious, Andy? You think about that, huh?
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, if you tell me there's gonna be a Borderlands movie, you have to take it one of two ways. You do go all in on the Eli Roth business and make it this messed up, fucked up space Western tale of. Everybody's violent because this is the post-apocalypse or whatever, and people are sawing people in half and everything's fucked up. Or you go all the way on the goofy side and make it this fun, upbeat thing that adopts from Tales from the Borderlands and makes it like this funny movie. Eli Roth directing and Kevin Hart starring as what's his name? As Roland makes me go, okay, I still don't know which one this is going to be. The thing that would sell me on this movie is if Eli Roth and Taika Waititi were co-directing, because I feel like that would capture the absolute essence of Borderlands being this weird fucked up thing.
Yeah, no, I'm down for any Taika Waititi movie, but yeah, he should have been director of Borderlands for sure.
For sure. That would be amazing. This I'm still very fascinated with, and I hope by the time this comes out, theaters are back because I want to watch this in a theater on day one.
Could they have made a mistake? Could he be Claptrap? You know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
That would be
a great role.
I could see them giving him one of the, you know, those wheels that you stand on? Like, it's just one wheel and you stand like 1 foot to the left, 1 foot to the right, and you lean and you, it's like a Segway, but one wheel. Mm-hmm. Put him on one of those, cardboard box around it. He's pretty much right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kevin Hart as Claptrap would maybe be one of the great Hollywood castings of our time if they were able to pull that off. I'm now sad that he's playing Roland because I don't know what that looks like. Excited to see though. To continue the conversation though about games on the big screen, story number 6, our last news story for the day. Netflix orders a Tomb Raider anime series. This is from Aaron Couch at Hollywood Reporter. Netflix is upping its anime offerings with two new series drawing from the world of Legendary's MonsterVerse, being King of Monsters or Godzilla or whatever, as well as Square Enix's Tomb Raider video games. Tomb Raider picks up after the events of Square Enix's Tomb Raider video game reboot trilogy, which was released in installments from 2013 to 2018 and was developed by Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal. It'll be unrelated to the ongoing series of films starring Alicia Vikander as Lara Croft, the adventurer first introduced in 1996. Tasha Wu, known for The Witcher Blood Origin, will write and executive produce Tomb Raider. Other executive producers include DJ2 Entertainment founder and CEO Dimitri M. Johnson, Steven Bugage, and Howard Bliss, and Jacob Robinson. Cool. Tomb Raider anime.
There was a rumor about the movie too a couple days ago, right? Like that they got a writer for the new Alicia Vikander movie.
Did they? I've never paid attention to those movies because they've just not appealed to me.
It was fine. Like, no, I mean, it was confused. Like, it seemed like it wanted to be like five different movies, and then at some point someone went, "Oh shit, we got to make this Tomb Raider too." And then like, It was a good vehicle for Walton Goggins to like chew the set for a while. And like beyond that, it wasn't much of a thing.
I really enjoy him.
He's great. He has a new Netflix show too, doesn't he?
Old Gog, man.
Yeah. And just a fantastic name.
I'm excited to see what a Tomb Raider anime looks like. I wouldn't have ever thought of a pitch of a Tomb Raider anime. Like that's like the last franchise I would think to put in anime form, but I'm not against it. Like it sounds like it could be cool, especially coming off of the trilogy.
I'm going to open a can of worms here. What the hell does anime mean now?
Okay. I had that thought too. Like, are you giving this to a Japanese studio to work on, or is this just going to be an anime style thing worked on by a Western company?
Like people Western refer to anime Avatar as like anime. Yeah, it's they call it Western anime.
But why is it anime? That's just a cartoon.
But it's different. You know what it is.
Like what makes anime anime it, other than it was made in Japan?
I mean? Usually the boobies, right?
Not all anime have boobies.
I know. It was a joke. It was a joke.
I know. But anime fans will get mad at
you. That was really funny.
People reference all sorts of anime that don't have boobies.
I'm going to Google anime.
Animes that I've never heard about.
But chat is referencing like Castlevania, which is written by Warren Ellis, who is not in any way a Japanese person. And like, I'm just confused. Like, is it a genre? And if it's a genre, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's my thing is within anime, like there are different... There are different types of anime that you couldn't really narrow down into one particular thing. Like, Agretsuko is way different from Dragon Ball Z, which is way different from One Punch Man. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I don't, like, if you told me, you know, hey, we're going to... Yeah, it, no, I don't know. I don't
is
know.
Dragon
like,
Ball
what does that mean that you're making a Tomb Raider anime? You're making a Tomb Raider cartoon, unless it's produced in Japan.
But is Dragon Ball really that different than One Punch Man? Like, One Punch Man is satire.
Those two are very similar.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah, okay, good. I just want to make that point.
No, throwing Death Note.
That is a shonen genre. That is actually like a...
One Punch Man is a parody of that, though.
Yeah.
It started off as a parody now. It's kind of
like it's a comedy. Like, it's more of a comedy. Like, Dragon Ball Z is action, whereas One Punch Man is comedy.
But like even among shonen stuff, like there's a big difference between like Bakuman and Dragon Ball, or like Chainsaw Man and
or Pokemon or something.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Chainsaw Man.
Chainsaw Man.
Is it as good as it sounds?
Yes.
All right.
You know what I've been watching lately? I've been watching that Hunter x Hunter.
Porn. Yes.
Okay. I've been watching Hunter x Hunter and porn, but Hunter x Hunter. I'm so far. I'm at episode like 16. I'm enjoying that thing. Yeah. I'm having a blast with it.
Wait,
show.
Like, it has a Yu Yu Hakusho kind of turn where it's like, all right, yeah, now it's just like a only fight anime, but it's a really good fight anime after a while.
Okay. I want to see what that fishing pole. Like,
that made me really want to watch that Yu Yu. Like, right now, what you just said, the Yu Yu, I can't say it. I can't say the rest.
That's Yu Yu Hakusho? As far as
that's it. There we go. You piqued my interest.
Kevin, have you seen Yu Yu Hakusho?
No.
We should watch Yu Yu.
I've always wanted to, though, because it's one of those, like, that was always on, like, Toonami, right?
Yep.
And it's just one of those things where it's like,
podcast.
I was always like, I don't have context for any of this. I'm going to go back to watching the same episodes of Dragon Ball Z.
I just watched Yu Hakusho. I could not do another rewatch of it right away. Ask me in a few months, though. I'll be done.
How long is it?
I love Yu Hakusho. Like it's like 100-something episodes. Kevin, I watched it, no joke, in about maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah, but like you have no loved ones. During Christmas break. Like you're not hanging out with anyone.
Just a panoramic.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
It was just Bloodborne and you, Aksha. That was true. Anyway, Imran, very excited to see what's up with this Tomb Raider anime and whether this. I'm excited to see whether it actually is anime, but that's probably so far away. If I wanted to come out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Hyposphere Rebirth from Xbox One, the Dark Eye Chains of Satina on Xbox One and Switch, Butterfly on Xbox One, and then the Dark Eye Memoria for Xbox One and Switch. I always hate now that I have like my Twitch on my second monitor. I try to do the thing where I switch between Discord and the dock so I can look at Imran when I'm talking, but then also go back to the dock when I need to reference it. For some reason, when I click off of the Discord, it doesn't automatically bring up the dock, and so I have to like fumble around for a bit. I got to figure this out.
I've got a smaller monitor underneath the camera and a bigger monitor to the side, and the dock is on here, and the smaller monitor has like the Discord on it.
Smart.
That's pretty smart.
Smart.
Wait, but are you like full screening? Like maybe just don't full screen the Discord call.
Yeah, but like when I clicked the dock, then that's gonna still minimize it, you know, or put the dock in front of it. I'll figure it out. I just gotta maneuver around it.
You can do the thing where you drag to the side, and then it only takes up half the screen, and then you put the monitor the script on the other side.
See, but then I'll be like looking to the right side of the screen whenever I'm talking to you guys, and I feel like that's going to take my eyes off the center, which I know I'm barely looking at the center anyway.
I don't like when people look to the center. I like when see you looking a little bit. Well, you're looking down a lot, but yeah. I like when people look to the sides a bit more. Left or
I'll
right.
I'll figure it out. Yeah. New dates for you. The Lord of the Rings Gollum has been delayed to 2022. And then deal of the day, we have PS Plus games announced for February 2021. They look like this. We're getting Control Ultimate Edition, Destruction All-Stars, and Concrete Genie.
That's a very good month. Yeah.
That is a hell of a month. So, we're going to talk about that a little bit in a second. But before we do, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, your support means the world to Kind of Funny because of you, the audience. Kind of Funny is able to do cool things like hire Snowbike Mike, hire Raj Pokorny, launch The Blessing Show, do awesome daily Twitch streams, have awesome guest spotlights on Kind of Funny Games Daily, and so much more. You can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to support Kind of Funny Games Daily and all the content that we produce on this side of Kind of Funny. And you can gain special perks like exclusive content, post shows, becoming a Patreon producer, and much more. Once again, just go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to support the show and learn more about what we have to offer. Now, Imran, speaking of our PS Plus offerings this month, we got a question in from Frank Furter, who writes in and says, "Morning, Blessing and Imran. Remember when 505 said that we had to purchase a new complete version of Control in order to play it on next-gen consoles, and we all flipped out? Well, it was announced this morning that both the PS4 and PS5 versions will be free for PS Plus members. So with Control being now on Game Pass and on the list for PS Plus games, did we freak out over nothing? Were the sales of the complete edition that bad that they opted into Game Pass and PS Plus to get it into more people's hands? Or am I just reading too much into it? Thanks for all you do, Frank Furter."
Okay, so chat can correct me. You're wrong, can correct me if I'm wrong here. But the Control on Game Pass is not Control Ultimate Edition. It is still the Xbox One version of Control, but you can play it on a Series X. This version on PS Plus is the Ultimate Edition, which is the next-gen version, the actual PS5 version of Control. I think that is the case. Like, you're wrong, can't tell me. But
I believe that's the case also.
In which case, it's still not good enough because Xbox users should also get a similar like deal like this is. But I don't think we freaked out over nothing because we don't know the thought process that led to this happening. It could be they did see that backlash. They did see the freak out and they went, oh shit, we should like maybe make good on this thing. Or it could be that in a combination of the pre-orders for Ultimate Edition weren't doing well, or Ultimate Edition was taking a lot longer than they thought. Cause like, I don't know about everyone, but like PR for Control was offering us codes like the day like the day before it was supposed to come out, that just got delayed. And like nobody knows why. So like maybe it was a technical reason and like that kind of snowballed and this sort of stuff. Like it's, I think people should, if they see a bad deal, they should call it out, but don't ever be like insincere about it. You can be sincere about how much this Control thing sucked. And like, if you're being sincere about it, then maybe it does get changed. So I don't think the lesson for this is being like, no, let's just wait and see. It should be like, no, this looks like shit because you guys changed this up. And apparently they are doing some degree of make good on it.
Yeah, this very much strikes me as some sort of reaction to all the stuff that went down in a way where it's like, all right, like you guys obviously didn't like that thing. Pre-order numbers are also reflecting that you guys aren't into this. And so we're going to find a way to get you Control in a way that is in a way that somewhat fixes the issue of you guys not being able to get the game if you have the original copy. Yeah. Either way, it makes for a good month of PS Plus, and so I'm down for this. Like,
yeah, no, this I'm is excited a very for, good for that. Brand new game, Control Ultimate Edition, and Concrete Genie, which is a good game on its own.
Yeah, very excited for that. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Rewrite and list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Timmy Buddy writes in and says, yesterday the GameStop stock was $150. As of right now, 10 a.m. Pacific time, it is now over $330. $330.
What? So if you did buy it yesterday,
gamble.
Holy shit. But that can't continue, right? As we say, like it's still going up. That's fucking wild.
It is gonna wild. It's gonna drop astronomically. The question is when.
Yeah.
Can you gamble right now and tomorrow double that earning?
I wonder if all the people that own GameStop are liquidating. Because, like, imagine you're a CEO and you fucking have, I don't know, 10,000 shares. Like, wouldn't it make the most sense? And, like, granted, there's our laws to protect all this stuff. But, like, wouldn't it make sense? Like, fuck, if you're just an employee that's been there for fucking 15 years, the place is about to fucking close, wouldn't it make the most sense right now to liquidate?
They used to offer a stock, but like as the stock started dipping, they're like, maybe you guys don't want to keep this. So I kind of wish I like kept that for a really long time.
God damn it.
Damn. Ignacio Rojas says Dishonored 2's level is called the Clockwork Mansion. Thank you for that. CJ says Kevin Hart was in a serious acting role in The Upside Down with Bryan Cranston. That movie was terrible, but it wasn't typical goofball Kevin either. Maybe that was part of why it was terrible. And I feel like I'm hating on Kevin Hart. I love Kevin Hart when Kevin Hart's being goofy and funny.
Yeah, Jumanji was
but
a
when
good
he's
movie.
Fucking serious, he can get the fuck out. He can get the fuck
when he's
out.
Fucking serious, he's like, get the fuck out of my house, Kevin Hart. Throwing all my DVDs out the window if you're being serious in them. Nobody got time for Kevin Hart being serious.
I really hope Chaim is like interviewing Kevin Hart in the other room and he just like overhears that.
Kevin's like, did I just say my name? Chaim's like, no, it wasn't. Trust me,
do we call him Chaim now? Because I love that. Because I keep going.
Because there's
Michael.
So many Michaels. There's Michael Jordan, Mike Tyson.
I love that. At IGN, at one point, there was four or five Michaels, and we called them all by their last name. So I'm all in. I just wanted to be kept up to date. I like this Chaim
kid. Calling people their last name is one cool and two professional. So, like, if you can combine the two, then great.
Nina Baja says, Imran's correct. Lovecraft County's Misha Green has been tapped to write Tomb Raider 2 2 days ago. Oh.
That's fun.
And then this is the last
Tomb Raider. Sorry, one more note. There was no breaking news up until this point. So if there were predictions, which I don't think anyone ever fucking set up.
There you go. And I guess we did the other one for your wrongs. And so let's see. We had one, two, three,
well, no, but we
four.
Need,
and,
oh,
we didn't put an over-under number.
Well, we said five.
Yeah, I think it was five. And oh, I'm about to read the fifth one, which is the last one. And so the last one is from LeeBot5000, who says, Kevin said that Eli Roth only makes violent films, but his last theatrically released movie was the kids film, The House with a Clock in Its Walls. So he seems to be trending away from his roots.
That sounds scary. Sure. I wouldn't want to watch that.
There you go. And also think, like, one of the ones Ignacio Rojas saying Dishonored 2's level is The Clockwork Mansion was more of a clarification, because I think I said that, but I was also...
game in the market.
I'm just saying that's not like a pure you're wrong. That is more so of a, hey, just so you know, you got it right, but you were just iffy on it. That's it for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. The rest of this week's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily go like this. Tomorrow, it is Greg and Tim, and then Friday is Greg in our Kind of Funny Spotlight, Giancarlo Valdez. If you're watching this live on Twitch, after this is Snowback Mike and Greg playing, let me go into my DMs, Gears 5 co-op.
It's pretty cool.
If you're watching this live on, I just said that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every day at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.